Welcome to the Audiobook Speakeasy. I'm Rich Miller, and I'm your host here at the Speakeasy. This is where you'll meet narrators, coaches, engineers, and other audiobook professionals, as well as some listeners who will be sharing what they look for in a good audiobook. If you're interested in audiobook production, you've come to the right place. Tonight's Speakeasy Chat is being brought to you by Squeaky Cheese Productions on The Cutting Wedge. You can find them on the web at squeakycheeseproductions.com. Tonight's chat is also brought to you by David Stever's Raven Rain, book 3 in the Johnny De La Rosa thriller series. A hard-charging, hard-boiled detective who enjoys beautiful women and top-shelf bourbon, Johnny De La Rosa's past collides with his future when hired to stop a blackmail scheme against a local celebrity, former pro football star turned car dealer Stan Shelton. He's pressed into a fourth and long, with the clock running out, as his journey to find the truth and clear his client spirals into an abyss of deceit and death. Noir for the 21st century, Raven Rain, narrated by Bill Lord, comes to audio in October 2020. And now, come on in, grab a drink, pull up a chair, and join us for a friendly chat about audiobooks. My guest tonight is the founder and CEO of a media company specializing in audiobooks, podcasts, and vocal leadership, Twin Flame Studios. Tina Dietz, thanks for joining me in the Speakeasy tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Rich.
Glad you could make it. I ran into you on LinkedIn not too long ago, and I thought, Tina, I remember Tina. I actually did a book for Tina way back.
You did a great book for us. Yeah.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that book too. I thought that the author had a really good take on negotiating. It was a business book. And I think that was back in 2017, maybe even before that.
Yeah. I was 17 or 16, actually. Authentic Negotiating by Corey Kupfer. Yeah. Great book.
Yeah. And I watched him a little on YouTube, and I really liked his style. It's very, very straightforward. I think he has a lot of good things to say. So, anyway, that was a while ago and kind of lost track of you. And then I was listening to the VO Meter with Paul Stefano and Sean Daly, and Paul mentioned Twin Flame Studios. And I thought, I gotta look that up. Found out it was you, found you on LinkedIn. So I'm glad this worked out.
Yeah, me too. And Paul Stefano has been with us now for over a year as our lead audiobook director for our author narrated audiobooks. He's just an absolute pro and a gem, and we love him. So
that's fantastic. I didn't realize that he was doing that. If he mentioned that, I missed that as what he was saying. I know that he said that he had been doing work for Twin Flames, and so
he's a pretty modest dude. Yeah,
he is. Yeah, Paul's a great guy. I'm really glad I got a chance to meet him at APAC. I think it was last year. It might have been 2 years, but whenever it was, I'm glad I finally got a chance to meet him after hearing him for so long.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I love this industry. I love voice acting, and you know, that's how I kind of entered into things with this particular niche in business. But it's actually a world I miss greatly because, you know, doing what I do, I don't get to necessarily play in the voices side of things like I used to.
Sure, yeah, that can be a problem going into the administration and owning
right.
a company that does more things than just the narration.
Can
be a problem. Well, so Tina, thank you so much for coming into the Speakeasy tonight. What are you drinking tonight?
I am having a Captain Picard, Earl Grey, hot.
Captain Picard, that's great.
Yes.
I've never heard of a mug of tea referred to as a Captain Picard. Now, I will say that back in the day when it was first airing, I watched a lot of Next Generation. My wife actually rewatched the entire series a few years ago, and I started watching it. And for some reason, I just could not get into it as much. But he is a classic. It was his performances were always fantastic. So that's great. Now I know he drank Earl Grey tea.
That's right.
Well, I'm going to join you tonight in an alcoholic beverage, as usual. I am having something that is relatively new to me. I'm having a very classic cocktail called a Negroni. And
I like Negronis. Yeah, they're a little weird, but they're good.
Yeah, and I will say that the first time I had one, which was, I think, a couple of years ago now, because I've got a very good friend who loves Negronis. And so I thought, well, okay, I'll buy a bottle of Campari. And so I bought it, and I made one, and I absolutely hated it. And I threw out half of it. I don't throw out alcohol.
And
I threw out the last half of that drink because I hated it so much. But people's taste buds change. And so earlier this year, after the pandemic started, we were at home doing a jigsaw puzzle. And I thought, you know what? I haven't had one of those in a long time. And my friend Sharon mentioned it again recently. Maybe I should try another one. And I had made a couple of other drinks that use Campari, which is quite bitter, which is the reason that some people have a hard time with it at first. And I liked it in those drinks. And so I thought, well, maybe I'll try another one. And so I tried it and I thought, hey, you know, this isn't half bad. And then when I had my second one, I thought, hey, this is actually pretty good. And so now it's in regular rotation on the cocktail menu here in the speakeasy.
I think it's a little bit like red wine. It's one of those things that those bitterness of the tannins and all of that, you kind of develop a taste for it after a while.
Yep.
I kind of like the bitters and things like that, even though I don't drink much at all. My body kind of hates it, which is annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Super
yeah.
annoying. And but I like those classic cocktails sometimes, but they do take some getting. They're strong.
Yes.
If nothing else, yeah.
Yes, I learned that recently. I mean, a Negroni is equal parts gin, sweet vermouth, and Campari. And a friend was coming over. We were having cocktails distanced on the patio. We have a nice big patio, and so we can sit apart from each other. And it was a relatively cool day in our recent heat wave summer. And so I had a Negroni, and I made it with an ounce and a half of gin. So it was a 4.5 ounce drink. And I was thinking, well, it's only an ounce and a half of gin. And the other two, I mean, those aren't liquor, you know. Well, after two of those, I was feeling it way more than I expected to. So I actually did the math, and I figured out that, yeah, Campari is a liqueur and sweet vermouth is not full-strength wine. But when you put the two of those together in twice the quantity of the gin, you're actually drinking essentially two amounts of the liquor that you've got. And so after two of those, I had already had four drinks, even though I didn't realize it. And so it was a surprise. So now I'm aware of how strong a Negroni actually is.
One of those moments where you go to stand up and you're like, what just happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really a little surprising. I keep fairly close track of how much I've had to drink in any one given evening. And this was a bit of a surprise. So anyway, lesson learned. So I hope the Captain Picard is good for you. I'm enjoying the Negroni so far. Tina, thanks again for coming in. Cheers.
Oh, cheers.
So Tina, where are you from?
I'm originally from a small town south of Buffalo, New York, called Holland, New York. So I grew way out in the country and spent a bunch of time in the Western New York area in the suburbs, and then moved to Costa Rica for a couple of years. I still have some property down there, been building a community of conscious entrepreneurs down in the Central Valley region of Costa Rica. But through the jigs and the reels, found myself here in Florida. And I've been here for about 4 years.
Costa Rica, that's fantastic. I've got a friend who, prior to this year, went to Costa Rica every year for some kind of retreat. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I think it was belly dancing. And
I'd be down with that. That'd be great.
She loved it, and she loved Costa Rica. And
it's a beautiful country. So gorgeous.
And I just heard of another friend of a friend who is actually talking about moving there, like retiring there. So that's fantastic. How did that come about? What sent you down to Costa Rica?
Well, you know, I had been looking at mobile businesses. I grew up as an entrepreneur, but I never wanted to be one because I literally grew up in my parents' business. We lived upstairs and the business was downstairs, and not a sexy business. They sold wood burning stoves and fireplaces, but they built it from scratch. It was very successful, but I'm an only child, and my kind of annoying younger sibling was the company. And so I never wanted to be an entrepreneur with all the hours and everything that it took. And when I got older and I was searching, because, you know, you grow up an entrepreneur, it's hard to not be one. Very hard to not be one. I was trained as a therapist. I tried to work in the nonprofit world. I worked in higher education. I started my own nonprofit with teenagers. And it was all very interesting and really great, but I kept getting pulled back into the world of entrepreneurship no matter what I did. And I didn't realize at the time, you know, for many years, that not everybody thinks like that. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people are very content to go along being told what to do. Not me. So what ended up happening, I was in a full-time coaching practice, business coaching and development, and ended up working with you know, more than 20 different industries in 8 different countries over the years. But we came to a point in the house that we had that it would become kind of a money pit. We wanted our time and freedom back. And my husband at the time, my kid's dad, was suddenly able to go mobile with his job. And one of the things that I did at the time with my clients were these 5-year vision plans. And in our 5-year vision plan, we were living mobile and we had looked at Costa Rica as a company. My years ago when I was working with my dad and developing a company with him, we had been running retreats for massage therapists in Costa Rica. He loved the country. I got to know people, even though I had never been there. So I knew a lot about the lay of the land. So when my husband had this opportunity, we looked at each other and we said, well, we were talking about selling the house anyway. Why don't we sell the house and move to Costa Rica? You know, and
that's
all
fantastic.
Of a sudden, everything fell into place. It was so fast. I made a couple of phone calls to people I knew down there. And all of a sudden, we had an apartment. We had a place for the kids to go to school. And I did a little Facebook research and found people who were going to be living in the town that we were in. It was so cool how fast everything came together.
That's
so we
great.
Did a 3-month test run, came back for a few months, stayed with family, and then went back down again for over a year. And it was a beautiful, beautiful experience. And that's where the impetus for the conscious community came from. So we've been building that for the last 5 years or so down there. But of course, this last year, I haven't been able to get down there, unfortunately.
Yeah, travel is definitely difficult these days. My understanding is that most of the airlines now are actually improving things and making air travel much less unsafe than it was initially during the pandemic. But in most places now, there's still, well, you have to, you know, isolate for 14 days. And so that means that your trip has to be longer than 14 days to be worth it. So it's,
right.
It's still really difficult.
It's rough. And living in Florida, nobody wants us. So,
well, it's kind of getting that way to the whole country. It's difficult to get to a lot of places these days. But we'll leave the politics out of it for now. Well, that's very cool. I love hearing stories like that where, well, you know, let's think about doing something. And hey, look, we did it. That's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually tried narrating my first audiobook from Costa Rica, and I also started my podcast while we were down there. So what I learned about, you know, narrating audiobooks, I had taken some master classes with Pat Fraley and my voiceover teacher, Tony Silveri from All Coast Talent, and I fell in love with audiobooks. But when I got into the actual narration portion of it, I realized that I didn't have the patience for it.
I really did not
have the patience for it. So, but the audiobooks just stayed with me. Clearly, the idea and the love of it stayed with me.
Clearly, yeah. No, that is a thing. And I try to make sure people know that who are getting into it. You need to try this for a little while before you really can commit to, you know, a 10-hour book. And I know plenty of voice actors who say, you know, I did one audiobook, I will never do another one. And
exactly.
Then there are a lot of us who say, I love this kind of stuff. So, you know, different things for
different
people.
Strokes.
Yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. So you've done quite a few different things. So down in Costa Rica, so when was that you recorded that audiobook?
Oh, I think that was 2013.
And that was sort of your entry into the audiobook world?
Yeah, I had been doing some voiceover work as basically a paid hobby. I did a lot of theater when I was growing up. I had some vocal training and singing and all of that. And I had been away from it for years. And, you know, I had 2 young children and I was looking for a creative outlet. And it just so happened that Tony Silveri was one of my mom's yoga students.
Oh, wow.
And Tony was a very well-known, you know, voice actor, and had just started an agency called All Coast Talent, which still exists. And she's an absolutely fabulous human being and amazing coach, amazing agent. And I happened to live like 2 miles from her or less. So I started going to one of her group voice acting classes, getting auditions. I absolutely loved every single minute of it. And when the audiobook opportunity came along to work with Pat Fraley, then I took it and we did a couple of days of really intensive work. And that is when I had what I call my chocolate and peanut butter moment about audiobooks. And it was like everything came together. And, you know, I had been coaching businesses and working with a lot of business owners, consultants, and a lot of them were doing bestseller campaigns, self-publishing their books, and you have to publish a book to have credibility and all of that world. But none of them were doing audiobooks. So suddenly I had this knowledge about the audiobook world and the industry, and I got very curious about how all that worked. That is what led me to the rabbit hole that I ended up going down and deciding to pilot offering done-for-you audiobook services for the nonfiction authors, that many of which were my colleagues and clients.
Cool. And so that was the genesis of Twin Flames?
Yeah, that was the genesis. It didn't become Twin Flames until some years later because I kept the coaching. I wasn't sure how things were going to go. But within a year of starting to offer the Done For You audiobook services, that took over about 75% of the company. And wow. Now the last 4 years that we have really focused on audiobook production and publishing in the nonfiction space, podcasting development and ongoing production more in the corporate space and the vocal leadership, we've doubled the company. We're on track for our fourth year of doubling the company.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Twin Flames, it wasn't that originally. You were doing the, you know, complete audiobook production initially, but Twin Flames came a little later after you figured out that was going to work.
Yeah, after I figured it was going to work and I did a rebrand, it was actually about a year and a half ago now when we shifted the name and the brand over to Twin Flames. I had a lot of changes in my life in all of the in-between part, and my kid's dad and I had split up after 20 years, and I had a new partner come into my life, and he and I decided that we were not going to be just partners in life, but partners in business as well. And that's the genesis of where the name change comes from, of Twin Flame Studios.
Got it. I was thinking maybe it was a throwback to family selling wood-burning stoves.
Oh, I guess it could have been. Yeah, good point.
Well, that's cool. That's a lot of change at one time. And I'm sure that was not an easy decision, deciding, well, we're just not going to be just partners, but also business partners. That doesn't always go so well.
Risky.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to consider doing that. My wife and I get along great. I'm afraid that, and we actually, we're both entrepreneurs in completely different businesses. And I think that it works great that way for us because we bounce ideas off each other and we talk about,
exactly,
you know, this business aspect and that business aspect. I suspect that if we were actually working together, it would not be so good. And my guess is that she would agree with me.
Right. But, yeah. We weren't sure.
Yeah.
I'm
sure it's somebody who's going into something like that, smart to consider every angle.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things you can't really consider, to be totally honest. You know, we weren't sure, but we basically said, well, let's give it a try. And we have completely different skill sets. You know, I'm very much a front man. I'm very much out in the marketing and the sales and the conversations and the creative and the vision. My husband, Robin, is a data architect. He is a software engineer of, you know, par excellence of 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happened in the combination of our skills, once we found our groove and our territory kind of inside of the company,
mm-hmm,
it's just become so much better. And, you know, we've actually more than doubled our team in the last year because of our kind of combined superpowers, so to speak. And, you know, it's also funny is, I think everybody on our team, but one is a voice actor and a narrator.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
that's cool. Well, I'm glad to hear that it's working out for you guys. So I can certainly see how having completely different skill sets could be a benefit in having something like that work out.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, we're pretty good at disagreeing with each other and then figuring it out and making it up afterwards. So
yeah,
that helps.
That's a really important skill set.
Really important.
In life and in business. So, you know, to put audiobooks aside for a second, I'm interested in the other aspects of the business, and then we can, you know, focus on audiobooks in a minute. But what's the podcasting part of the business?
I fell in love with podcasting when I started my own show in 2015 called The Start Something Show. And I hired a company called Cashflow Podcasting to take care of all of the launch and the technical and to walk me through it. So two things happened. One is I fell in love with podcasting and it was like coming home. You know, shortly after I started, my mom actually sent me a recording that she had found on an old cassette tape. She actually held her phone up to the cassette tape playing. Somehow she found a cassette tape player. I don't know where she found it. And it was me at about 2 years old. Somebody had given me one of those old tape recorders, you know, the kind that has a little tiny swirly cord and a tiny little microphone we used to have back in like the 70s.
Yeah.
Love those things when I was a kid.
Yeah, me too.
And it's me walking around interviewing people at 2 years old. And I'm basically saying, "Hi, I'm Tina. What's your name?" I'm getting their name, you know. "Happy Easter. Do you like Easter?" You know, yes, we, and I'm like, "Okay, thanks. Bye." And I go on to the next person. And it was such a moment of clarity for me. And it brought back all these memories of doing pretend radio shows with my friends, with my boombox when I was a kid, and making mixtapes and all the things that I did with audio. And it was just, it was a really good moment of confirmation that I was on the right track. So I actually started working with Cashflow Podcasting in partnership with them to produce a lot of their podcast on the strategic side of things, on the coaching and working with people to get everything they needed to for their podcast. And we've continued that partnership in one iteration or another since for those last 5 years. So we still run some podcast masterminds together and do that kind of work. So it's really podcasting for business specifically. Cashflow Podcasting focuses more on entrepreneurs. Twin Flame Studios focuses more on executives and corporations. Hmm. So it's a nice arrangement.
So what do you do exactly in terms of producing podcasts?
We do, it's pretty much everything soup to nuts. So we start with the whole strategy of the podcast, the positioning, the naming, the artwork, the format, the internal, the content calendar, all the pieces that go into creating a really quality podcast, and how does it dovetail with their other marketing that they have going on? You know, podcasting is great for a whole combination of relationship marketing, influence marketing, and content marketing. Mm-hmm. But how does that actually get used and used well inside of a business format? So we are focused on kind of the return on investment, but it's not just the sales numbers. We're not really focused there. It's more, how does this all work together to really create high value?
Sure.
In one way or another. And so we work with internal podcast and external podcasts, mostly external. Some of the internal podcasts folks might not be familiar with, but there are podcasts in larger companies that are just for the employees.
Oh.
And it's a thing. So there is some of that as well. So we also do all the ongoing production, editing, distribution, and we have bi-monthly or quarterly gatherings of our host to continue to support them, to cross-promote their podcast, because we work a lot with the financial space, wealth management, CPAs, private equity companies, and other segments of the financial industry.
Well, that all sounds like something that I'm sure that a lot of people could use. As somebody who started a podcast by the seat of his pants and had to learn all of that stuff, I can imagine that there are people out there who would like to do that, but because they don't feel that comfortable with technology, or they don't know how to do this or where to go for that, you could just get stuck and not ever able to do anything. So having resources out there like Twin Flames, which can go out there and start everything for you and explain it in a way that whoever you are, you can understand it, I'm sure that is in high demand these days, given the popularity of podcasting.
Yeah, it's been great. And particularly in this time with companies that are used to being able to do a lot of live events and live networking, their podcasting kind of fills a need because it's still very relationship-based. It still has that kind of belly-to-belly feeling mm-hmm. that they're looking for, but without the travel.
Yeah, and I just heard something recently about the fact that some companies are going to wise up because of this pandemic and realize how much money they've been wasting on business travel.
So it's a little crazy.
Yeah, so a lot of this stuff is probably not going to be going away. Well, well, that's cool. So what about the vocal leadership, the other leg of the three-legged stool of Twin Flame Studio?
Three-legged beast,
yeah,
yes.
Vocal leadership, what does that entail?
Vocal leadership is a body of work that I've been developing for a while. And there actually are a couple other people who are vocal leadership experts out there, incredible people, actually. But I didn't know that when I started this. And it turns out we're all kind of thinking along the same lines, which is basically that you've got two different voices. One I call your big V voice, which is actually the voice inside of you. And that is, you know, everything you say to yourself, your beliefs, your values, all of that, that kind of lives inside the voice in your head and the wisdom of your body. And then you have the small V voice, which is your physical voice. And if you imagine that every person is a musician, the small V voice, the physical voice, is the instrument that you play. And your big V voice, your internal voice, is the music that you're playing. In order to become a virtuoso, you have to be able to have facility over both the music that you're playing, the music that you're writing, and the instrument that you're playing. So what I work with, you know, CEOs or executives or business leaders, we're looking at what are they broadcasting? What is the message that they're kind of naturally coming across with? What is there any discrepancy between that and what they truly want to be doing? And we also, there's a lot of factors involved with the voice and how different vocal factors have you be perceived as a leader or credible or trustworthy. And, you know, sometimes that's a matter of a physical change in the voice. A lot of it comes down to breathing. Anyone in the voice industry will tell you a lot of things come down to breathing.
Yep.
That's for sure. And some of it comes down to what you're actually thinking when you're talking, or what you're feeling when you're talking. And that can change as well. So it's a whole body of work designed to help people be more effective leaders in a very authentic, congruent way. And sometimes it's just a few physical tweaks we're talking about. And sometimes we go down the rabbit hole all the way into personal development and even your spiritual core.
Well, as a musician, as somebody who's dabbled in lots and lots of different kinds of instruments and music throughout the years, I love the metaphor. It's great. I wish I could get my internal voice to shut up every once in a while because I don't always like what it's telling me. but no, that's a great metaphor there. Well, so let's focus on the audiobooks then, although the other stuff is certainly interesting, especially to me as a podcaster. But everybody here is listening for the audiobook info. So So Twin Flame Studios, when it comes to audiobooks, do you have a specialty or a niche within audiobooks, or produce in all kinds of different genres? What do you focus on?
We focus on nonfiction. So our clients are those people who are using their book as a tool to build their platform in one sense or another. So a lot of it is either memoir, business, self-help, and those types of categories. Okay. And so, you know, one of the things we do a lot of in terms of our specialties, a lot of those books have charts or graphs or images or exercises and things like that. So that is one of the sweet spots that we have, is making sure that those get integrated into the audio really, really well. It takes a lot of pressure off of the author not to have to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that we specialize in is our author narration process, which is something I developed with Paul Stefano.
Oh, so somebody comes to you and says, here's my book and I want to get an audiobook produced, but I want to do it. And you deal with training them up on how to effectively narrate their own work.
Yeah. And mostly what we do, though, is we are actually do remote recording and full direction of authors from their home location. And we're able to remote in to test their audio, make sure they're up to par. We have a process for doing that. And then we do, you know, full direction and full live recording.
Got it. That's great. How do you, just on the technical side, is that through using Source Connect or is it in with some other method?
Yeah, similar IPDTL, Source Connect. Yeah, okay. Yeah, similar types of things.
Yeah, that's great. And so Paul's doing a lot of direction.
He is doing a lot of direction, and he's very, very good at it.
Yeah, no, that's great. So entirely nonfiction or just kind of a focus?
Entirely nonfiction. And the reason we do that is because, well, and I will say this, I have a nonfiction author who wrote a fiction book who came back to us. And because we already worked with her once, I'm making an exception. We'll see how that goes.
I can understand an exception like that.
Yeah. But most fiction authors, not only are you dealing with so many characters, and also the focus of the book is going to be different. Most fiction authors, they're focused on bottom line sales of the book, sales of the book, sales of the book. Mm-hmm. Most nonfiction authors are focused on, sure, sales of the book, but how does this fit into a larger picture of our marketing? How is our audiobook a tool and a resource for us?
Sure.
You know, I just spent an hour with a client who's audiobook is just published, running him through all the best practices on specifically audiobook promotion in relationship to his larger business plan strategically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see how that would be quite different, very different goal, set of goals for somebody with a book like that rather than a, you know, fiction author who wants to get their books out there to the largest fan base they can put together.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of the strategies are similar in terms of building an audience, but a number of them are different. I mean, most nonfiction books don't have fandoms, you know?
Right. Right. Although, I mean, I could certainly see it's not so much the books, it's the author who is a public figure who then,
yes,
you know, well, this guy taught me everything I know about, you know, take Corey Kupfer, negotiating. And so therefore I'm going to listen to everything that he says about anything. So I could see a fan base for the author.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, and also a lot of fiction books are more likely to be traditionally published, mm-hmm, especially those that already have, you know, large audiences. So there's just a lot of differences in how things get done or what gets used.
Yeah. So within nonfiction, I know that you mentioned finance at some point. Do you look at your total audiobook business as more focused in one area than another, or do you kind of, you know, is it all sort of equal?
I think across the board, the majority, if I had to pick kind of our top, would be business, the whole range of business type books, memoir. We do get a lot of memoirs. And personal development would probably be top three in terms of broad categories. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of nuance inside of those as well.
Yeah, definitely. Makes a lot of sense. All right. Well, that's cool. So walk me through a typical audiobook production. How does it start? Somebody comes to you, or you're going out there trying to scare up some business, and you run across somebody, and you see their book, and you bring them in, or how does that work?
The vast majority of our business is generated with referrals. So we have partnerships with about 70 different partners throughout the U.S. and Canada. And that's actually, you know, been the majority of my time, where I spend my time, is in developing relationships and these really great collaborations. And so we work with other people's authors because the audiobook is, you know, generally later in the process in terms of producing and publishing a book. And so, you know, we don't take the trust of our partners lightly. So they come to us and we have a conversation with them and help them decide on the direction and kind of format of their audiobook. And then it's really not a terribly hands-on process for the author, except for some key areas. We need author involvement in the beginning when we're setting things up and walking them through, you know, kind of the back end setup, their type of narrator they want. I'm using kind of professional narration as the example here. Mm-hmm. Our narration process, our audition search, we're looking for people that not only have great audio and a great voice, but who can also really evoke the author. We're not looking for a voice match, but we're looking for an energetic match, mm-hmm, someone who can really own the material and also, you know, understands that we're in collaboration with each other. I have worked with so many fantastic voiceover artists and professional narrators like yourself, Rich, who, you know, will bring extra information to the table, or have you thought about this, or, you know, totally, I got a handle, don't worry about it. And those people all go on a short list to make sure that every audition we get, that goes back out to them again. And because we really want to make sure our people get taken care of. That's one of our major, major core values.
And it's funny you mentioned the, you know, making sure that you have a handle on the author I don't remember how you just put it there, but making sure that you basically you get their voice and that comes into play. And that was the reason that I looked up Corey Kupfer on YouTube, and I saw some of the videos. I think it was YouTube, might have been Vimeo. I think it was YouTube, where he was interviewed by somebody. And so I got a sense of it's not his vocal quality, but it's his inner voice that you're talking about, and
how
he gets that out there. And I thought, oh, so that's what you're looking for, is you want to make sure that the narration style, even if it's not his voice and everybody listening knows it's not his voice, understands, you know, basically where he's coming from and how he gets information out there. So so that's great. It sounds like you make that kind of an important point of all the narration.
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons we provide, you know, speaking samples and links and things like that when we're posting an audition, why we are really clear about, you know, our per finished hour rate and what the responsibilities of the narrator are versus what our responsibilities are. So, you know, when folks are looking at the narration, you can make a really informed decision about if, you know, this is what you want to do. Mm-hmm. So it works both ways. You know, we're not just there for the rights holder, we're also in relationship with the narrator. And this is one of the reasons why, you know, my team is heavily composed of narrators, and why it works so well. Also makes team meetings really fun because people tend to break into voices at random, which I really enjoy. But essentially we hold the author's hand all the way through the process. We clarify and manage expectations. We keep things on track timeline wise. You know, we make sure the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, like pronunciations and the sections of the book to be included and any audio edits that need to happen and so on and so on, all the details that, you know, you have to handle as an audiobook narrator. Mm-hmm. And then of course we monitor the publishing process and make sure everything goes right. You know, we've seen a lot of changes in weird things like the end credits and the covers in the last like 6-8 months or so. And of course, managing expectations around the timeline for publishing because Audible lost its mind during COVID.
Yeah. Even before COVID, I would say.
Even before COVID. It's true. It's true.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. So when it comes to casting, you mentioned that you have a short list. Do you open that up? Do you just have a stable of narrators that you work with all the time? Do you go through ACX? How do you handle casting?
Yeah, we do both. We have a list that I have posted kind of open access to is through a Google form on the ACX, one of the ACX narrators groups on Facebook that I belong to. And because we do want to send out those audition notices to folks and give them kind of access to things. And we also post to ACX as well.
Okay. And where would you find this list? I mean, is this something where anybody can sign up and say, hey, look at me, I'm a narrator, or do you go out and find people?
You know what, it's a shortened Google link, so it's kind of an ugly link to narrate, but I can give it to you if you have show notes or you want to put it out for people.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'll include that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's good. And so, then during the process, how do you manage the production in terms of working with the narrator? Is it the typical, okay, you've got everything. Do you do like a first 15, kind of like ACX does? Yeah, something similar. Yeah.
Yeah, we do the first 15. And one of the biggest things we clarify in the first 15 is everything you need to deal with in that first 15. So nothing goes off the rails later.
Very smart. That is the subject of, I don't know how many threads in the past, probably 25 minutes. happens all the time. People asking about, well, they said this, and then they're having a problem with that, but they didn't have that in the first 15. Yep, you got to do that right at the very beginning. And it seems like every book that I do through ACX, more and more, I'm being so explicit, more and more explicit with the rights holders about this is what it's for, and make sure you include everything in there that you could possibly have any interest in saying yay or nay to.
Yeah, and really, authors have no idea what they need to include or not include. There's so many assumptions that get made. So we actually have a running list that we've kept over the years of every possible bullshit thing that could go wrong. Friggin' thing that could go wrong.
Sounds
and
smart.
We've found ways to kind of basically deliver that to the author and say, these are all the things you need to consider. And if you know, approve this, you are good with all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not exhaustive. It's not pages and pages long. We've gone to the really big things. I mean, one of the biggest things we run into, or used to run into, we don't run into it anymore, thankfully, is regionalisms in words like root and route and aunt and aunt.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff like that. I mean, we had one book, and she's from New England, and the one character had a very heavy kind of Rhode Island accent. We nailed that, no problem. But there were 38 times in the book where the word aunt or aunt was there, and our narrator said aunt. And it wasn't in the first 15. It was later in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And the author was just like, I'm so sorry. I have to have aunt.
Wow.
I can't get past it. And so we worked it out.
Yeah.
We worked it out, but it was like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh. And, you know, and this is the heroism of the narrator, right?
Right.
And then we work things out with our narrators and try to do whatever we can to make it as easy as possible and protect them from things like that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good that you've kept a running list. I'm sure it's quite long at this point.
It is. Yeah. Amore and amore. And I never thought that one would be an issue.
that's great. So then on the back end, when it comes to distribution, you work through ACX. Do you do the non-exclusive? Do you do exclusive? Has that been changing? I know that the marketplace has been going through quite an upheaval lately with all the new players when it comes to distribution. What are you finding is working these days?
It comes down to marketing plan. And this is something we talk with the narrator or the authors, of course, up front about, because you have to decide really right out of the gate when it comes to professionally narrated. We have more slush time when it comes to author narrated. But we talk with them about their marketing strategy. And a lot of our authors opt for going exclusive for the first year and then reevaluating after the first year. And some of them go non-exclusive, and then we get them out through, say, Findaway Voices and on some other platforms to distribute it in a wider range. But a lot of them really do find that they just want to end up focusing on Amazon because they're pushing towards a page in the internet that has all the versions of their book.
Mm-hmm.
And they can use the bounty links and they can, you know, do all the things that they can do. But some of our authors, they do go non-exclusive after the first year. Occasionally we have someone going non-exclusive out of the gate who is, really has a robust community, and they have a membership site that allows them to distribute their audiobook. They have the technology to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a couple of other big foundations like the Grief Recovery Foundation, they have a tremendous worldwide network, and they really need to be able to have hard copies, the CDs, which, you know, it's
pretty
very rare
these days, yeah.
Very rare, but they still have a need for that. So, you know, that's another example of a reason to go non-exclusive out of the gate.
Yeah. That's one of the aspects of this industry. I'll be very, very interested to see where things are 5 years from now, because everything is changing so quickly right now. And with more distribution options from different companies, I'm just really curious to see where that goes and whether or not 5 years from now, Audible is going to have a hard time getting exclusive distribution, or whether they're going to continue to just be the big gorilla and pretty much have control over things.
Yeah, it's a weird world. I mean, the one thing that we struggle with on the nonfiction end of things, I'd be curious from feedback, maybe there is a solution out there and we've missed it, is the lack of being able to purchase audiobooks in bulk. And because our authors want to be able to give their audiobooks away, to give credits, and there's the promo code, sure. But, you know, of course, those have been clamped down again recently because a couple of bad apples screwed things up for the rest of us.
Yep.
And it's very difficult when you're, say, a speaker and you do a lot of live events, and we will be doing that again, that you can't distribute your audiobook easily.
Yeah,
because if you could just distribute your audiobook easily, you wouldn't have to bring so many books to events.
Right. And it's not like you can say to Audible, well, I'm doing a conference and so I need 1,000 promo codes.
Nope. They won't do it. And they won't sell you, you know, wholesale. Like, you can buy wholesale cases of your book. You can't buy wholesale credits of audiobooks.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's not a not a situation that I'd heard of, but it makes a lot of sense that that would be a problem for, you know, depending on who the person is.
Yeah. Yeah, we run into that a lot, actually.
Well, that's great. So you sound like you're incredibly busy. I mean, this sounds like definitely a passion for you with the voice acting and your experience in theater, and yet you don't want to do the narration, but you've got this business now and you've got all these different aspects of the business. Do you find time to do anything when you're not actually working at Twin Flame Studios?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact,
that's good. I'm glad.
I my weekends are sacrosanct, and we're at the point now where we pretty much go away for a weekend or a long weekend almost once a month now.
Oh, that's
because
great.
I really need the brain space, because our, you know, the days are intense, you know, during the week. And I got two teenagers and they're fabulous, but, you know, still two teenagers. So we do a lot of mini travel, getaways to Airbnbs and whatnot, here in Florida, or occasionally the mountains in Georgia. And we're looking forward so much to being able to get together again with family and friends, because I've said many times, I'm an Italian grandmother in training, and I miss having slow food meals and hanging out with people. And I actually do a lot of reading, regular reading, instead of audiobook reading. I started having a book in my hand when I was 2 years old, and that's not ever going to change.
That's great.
And I do read mostly fiction, interestingly enough, but I guess, you know, it's one of those things that what you do for work, you're not necessarily doing for pleasure all the time.
Sure. Balance it out.
Balance it out. Yeah. And so, and artistic endeavors that I can get myself into, I really do love cooking and stand-up comedy, improv, those kinds of things, if I can get my hands on it.
That's great. That's good to hear. I like the fact that your weekends are sacrosanct. It's difficult when you're an entrepreneur. I mean, there are times when, just recently for me, I think I worked something like, I don't know, 16, 18 days straight, just because that's what happened, you know, and I didn't plan it that way. And in fact, generally speaking, I try to plan the opposite. I try to give myself, you know, days here and there frequently, and it just didn't work out this time. So every once in a while that happens, but it's good that you make that a point. I know that one of the biggest complaints that I hear from narrators as well as other entrepreneurs is it's hard to strike that work-life balance. It's a lot easier if you've got an 8-to-5 job, especially if it's the type of job where nobody expects you to do any work when you're at home. You do the job and then you leave, and it's not always possible when you're your own boss.
Yeah, I heard once on one of the sharks from Shark Tank, Barbara Corcoran, said there that work-life balance is actually a myth. There's only separation. And I took that to heart a couple of years ago and basically had to create some divisions in my time. Like, this is time for this. This is not time for this. Mm-hmm. And I have to be ruthless with it, because I want people, you know, I'm an extrovert and I want to be, and, you know, doing what I'm doing and growing the business and all of that, but it becomes diminishing returns if I go outside of those boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also one of the, I'm so grateful for and have such tremendous excitement about, you know, the team we've been building. You know, we're a team of, depending on the day, 8 to 10 now. And I actually love hiring folks who are inside of the audiobook industry into other roles, because what we're able to do is help people strike a balance where they can have income doing things for us, not just narration, but actually kind of running the company in the back end of things, depending on their skills. But then you can still be doing narration mm-hmm. and having the creative side of it expressed as well. So yeah, we've got just incredible people working with us.
That's great. That's great. Paul's the only one I know of for sure, but Paul is definitely, he's definitely committed to this business. I know that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Susan Fouché is on our team. We love her. David White, fabulous narrators, Justin Grant. So yeah, we're just really proud of our folks.
Cool. That's great. Always good to hear that. So you've worked with quite a few narrators at this point, I'm sure. I don't know how many books you've put out in total, but I'm sure that it's a substantial number of narrators. What words of wisdom would you have for aspiring narrators out there?
Don't let fear lead you. Don't let fear lead you. This is a creative process. And if you expect your creativity to make you a living, you may be doing your creativity a disservice. So before you step off into something like this full time, you need to approach it from a space of good-heartedness and expectations that not only will, you know, you be supported by the world, but that people are for you. Not everybody's for you. There's a lot of jerks out there. I get it. But most people are well-intentioned and want to work with you. The second part of that is always communicate more than you think you need to, particularly at the beginning of a project.
I love that.
Setting those expectations in detail mm-hmm. is incredibly important.
Even when I was in the business world, when I was working for high tech companies and startup that I worked for, they would make fun of me for the length of my emails and the amount of detail that I would include in them. And the downside of that is that I think there were times when they didn't actually read the whole thing, but when they did, they knew everything that I had to say, that I had to put out there. And
there you go.
And I think it was helpful because then everything is, you know, everything important is put out there and people understand what's at stake.
Exactly. But the nice thing about putting everything out there is if you take the tack that you are taking care of that person and you're taking care of their concerns and simultaneously you're taking care of yourself, then it becomes, you know, not a defensive position or an aggressive position, but it becomes a mutual collaborative situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Win-win.
Yeah.
Everybody comes out ahead if everybody knows what's happening all along the way.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Tina, thank you so much for coming into the Speakeasy. I appreciate your time. If you send me that link, I will include it in the show notes.
Happy to.
For the Google, I think you said it was a Google Doc?
It is a Google Form, yeah.
Google Form, right. Yeah. All right. Yeah, this is great. Thanks so much for coming in. I'm so glad that I was listening to the VO meter when Paul mentioned Twin Flames, because that was not a name I was familiar with. But when he mentioned your name specifically, I thought, well, that's a name I am familiar with. And so it was nice to tie the two together and to find you there on LinkedIn.
Oh, well, I appreciate it, Rich. It was really great to connect with you again. I absolutely loved your narration of Corey Kupfer's book, Authentic Negotiating. It was so good.
And I loved that book. It was one of those things. There have been a lot of nonfiction books that I've done. I haven't done all that much in business, a couple now, but that book, I actually thought, this is great. This guy has a really good, honest take on this that I appreciate, because my dad was the one who instilled honesty in me. Always, you know, always be honest no matter what you're doing. If somebody overpays you by 2 cents, give them the 2 cents back. You know, and so he was that type. And so I loved Corey's book because it wasn't, you know, this is how you can get what you want in some weird way. It was be honest. And I really appreciated his take on how to negotiate so that you can get what you want, but you can be honest about it the whole time. And so that was a great book. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a really lovely human being. I was happy to do his book. And that's one of the great things that I love about this business is that, you know, I don't have to be out there being the one doing all the change in the world. If my company can help more leaders get their message out to more people, we can all create more change together. Mm-hmm. That's really why we do this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. Well, I hope the Captain Picard was good. I got
it. It was delicious.
Well, that's good. Yes. So it sounds like that's something that you have frequently.
I'm actually more of a coffee person, but this time of day I get a switch to something else. But I've been talking probably for about 5 hours off and on.
Busy day. Here,
and then I'm like, my throat, man, I'm done.
Yeah, no, I understand. Well, I'm glad that the Earl Grey was good. The Negroni's gone. And I got to say, that first one, I may have hated it, but it's definitely a favorite now.
It just goes to show how things change.
They do. They do. I'll tell you, my tastes have changed a lot in the past 5, 10, 15 years. So this is great. Thanks again, Tina. And I will put everything out there in the show notes and let you know when this is out there.
Okay. Thanks, Rich. Really appreciate it.
All right. Well, that's it for tonight. Many thanks to Tina Dietz for coming in. I really enjoyed hearing about all the aspects of Twin Flame Studios, especially the audiobook part, and I hope you did too. Don't forget to check out the sponsor for tonight's episode, Squeaky Cheese Productions. They're on the cutting wedge. They're on the web at squeakycheeseproductions.com, and I'm very grateful for their support of the audiobook Speakeasy. And remember to keep an eye out for Bill Lord's narration of David Stever's Raven Rain, Book 3 in the Johnny De La Rosa thriller series, coming in October. I've already downloaded Auburn Ride, the first book in the series, and I'm looking forward to getting up to speed on Johnny De La Rosa. And don't miss the next Speakeasy episode when I'll be having a cocktail that Bill created inspired by Johnny De La Rosa. As always, you can find the audiobook Speakeasy on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Podbean, and all the usual apps. And you can find me at richvoiceproductions.com, where I've got some samples and links to audiobooks I've narrated, and where I'm also posting episodes of the audiobook Speakeasy. If you're enjoying our Speakeasy chats, please take a few minutes to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. And if you're not enjoying them, please find a podcast you do enjoy and leave them a review. Special shout-out this week to some random listener who gave the podcast a 1-star rating on Apple Podcasts without leaving a review. I guess that means I've officially made it as a podcaster. If you think this show is educational, entertaining, or valuable simply because it gives you an excuse to sit down and enjoy a cocktail in an otherwise hectic day, I'd really appreciate it if you'd add a buck or two to the tip jar. You can make a per-episode donation by signing up at patreon.com/audiobookspeakeasy, or you can make a one-time donation by visiting paypal.me/audiobookspeakeasy. Any financial support is greatly appreciated as it helps me keep the lights on here in the Speakeasy. Until we see you here in the Speakeasy again, I hope you can find some time to enjoy an audiobook. Cheers!